Hello and welcome back to the first Hulkcast of a new Aston Villa season and some new Aston Villa horizons on the, well, horizon. I'm James Rushton. I'm joined once again by Danny Raza. How's your summer break been from Villa?
Feels great to be back. I've been ignoring Villa as much as possible up until much recently, of course. Been trying to read up on everything that's been going on. Of course, a lot of us have been kept in the dark, except for a lot of random club statements over the past few weeks. But I think it meant that we could enjoy the World Cup a little bit, Villa fans, you know, without thinking about the ins and outs of the club so much.
Yeah, well, the World Cup was an excellent distraction from what was going on at Villa. And the situation was bad. It was really bleak. We can't ignore that. We'll get into the takeover, actually, because that's the very first thing I think we should address, mm-hmm. is the fact that Villa do, for the most part, have new owners right now. They have the NSWE group, which, of course, is Nassef Sawiris and Wes Edens, two Egyptian/American businessmen who operate globally. And these guys are real. The money's there. It's something we can see. It's not hidden. It's not something, you know, it's there, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I from what I see, it's a very positive deal. You know, we've got two businessmen who are, of course, well, let's say well endowed when it comes to the money. Do you know what I mean? Like their bank accounts are full. They're big, right? You know, Wes Edens is estimated to be something within the region between $2.5 and $3 billion. Nassef is estimated to be something between the regions of $9 and $10 billion. And obviously, Nassef is somebody who runs, as far as I know, loads of malls across the Middle East. So the bull rings of the Middle East, so to speak. And Wes Edens, as we know, is somebody who has experience at running a sports franchise, just like a certain Randy Lerner did. But I will say that the Milwaukee Bucks are slightly more and have been more successful than the Cleveland Browns were under his time. So, yeah, two very exciting owners have come in.
I think we'll break it down then. First, we'll talk about Edens. Wes Edens is an American businessman, private investor, venture capitalist, and someone who plays with a lot of money, but he doesn't mess around, mate. And from what I've seen, he's made smart deals. He lost a lot in that recession that happened 10-12 years ago in 2008, when it seems like everyone in America who owned anything lost everything. And he bounced back from that. So there's someone there, and this is important, who has experienced what amounts to failure at his level, which is very, I think, is very important in ownership. Randy Lerner didn't have that. No way. I mean, he inherited the Cleveland Browns, but there's no failure there. They just kind of existed. Wes Edens has experienced that kind of personal failure with that. He lost a lot of money in that recession. Big hit. Serious hit. And bounced back from it to the person he's today. A man who owns League of Legends franchise for the gamers out there, FlyQuest. He also owns the Milwaukee Bucks. And they're a big deal, mate. They're a small team, but they're punching above their weight. And that sounds really promising to me. The Cleveland Browns are massive and they're failing. It's completely different. The Milwaukee Bucks, owned by Edens, are punching above their weight and seem healthy, which is just simply, you know, that's something that speaks to me as a Villa fan.
Do you know what? Yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks, I mean, I've only recently gotten into NBA, but, you know, they've got some good players in their team. They're a team as well who are known, I think, particularly for their size and athleticism. But I think the thing to keep in mind is what he's done for the area of where the Milwaukee Bucks are based as well. You know, I believe he's been involved in moving them into a new stadium. The area, as far as I've read, anyway, has improved vastly since he took over there. The other thing is to remember that he works in a system where it does involve other big owners as well, and. You know, when he bought the club, I think it was back in 2014. It was something for around $550 million. That was off Herb Cole. So, you know, he's serious, and he means business. And the Milwaukee Bucks have actually improved since he's taken over. They've been okay, but you know, they've not been amazing. But as I say, big players in their side. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Let me get it right. Yeah, Antetokounmpo, who was in the NBA All-Star team last year as well, playing for them.
Yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course, signed, and this is the Times revealing this, on a contract worth $366,000 a week. We're talking, that must be around about what Cristiano Ronaldo's on.
Yeah, it'll probably be.
So that's mega money.
It's something like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of money. You got to remember the NBA season's a little bit shorter than the football season. I'm not so sure how it works like that. But yeah, he's earning a big buck over there.
Well, over the 4 years he's signed to, he's earning $76.1 million, which is thereabouts the worth of Aston Villa Football Club. So that no, they're paying a good player massive wages. Let's talk a bit more about the Bucks, because before Edens and his partner Mark Lazary bought the basketball team, the NBA were threatening to move it to a place that would operate them, Seattle or Las Vegas, because they demanded a new stadium be built for the Bucks. This is something that Edens and Lazary had to deliver on, and they did, to keep the Bucks in Milwaukee. Otherwise, they'd have moved and become a completely different team. That's a part and parcel of American sports, that if the city or the owners aren't going to pay up to regenerate the franchise, it's going to get moved to a place that will.
Oh, and people will be preying on it, because you got to remember that Seattle hasn't had a basketball franchise in I don't know how long. You know, so it's not like they'd struggle to find a new place for it. They will pounce on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure places like New York could have an additional one. You know, there's always going to be an option for them to rip a smaller team out and pull it in a, you know, a bigger pond, so to speak. Always, and across American sports, NFL. I mean, you can watch the documentaries of the Cleveland Browns completely tore apart by backroom dealings, city interference, politics, just tore a really, not a successful team, but one that was getting there, one that was loved. So pretty much like an Aston Villa. Imagine just being taught. Imagine Aston Villa being moved to Poole or Bath, you know, a South Coast place that would support a big team, you know, and attract, you know, move it to Bristol.
Well, it's, yeah.
To Canterbury.
It's worse than that, though, because, like, at least you'd be able to make it there. Like, a lot of these teams would be moved, possibly even out of the state, you know, which makes it very, very difficult for people to travel.
Of course, you've got to remember America is how big. Like, even if Villa were moved to Bristol, that's not a massively unfeasible journey from Birmingham.
That's it, yeah.
It's horrible, but, like, imagine the situation where your team is moved across the entirety of America. You're done. Even the Rams moving to LA, that's a massive distance from St. Louis to Los Angeles. It's incredible that they do that, but no, we can't go there. But the Bucks are safe because of Edens. That's really important to say. And their ownership structure is one of common sense. But there's also controversy in that, mate, because Edens and his partner Lazary also have an additional partner. However, it's Edens and Lazary who stumped up the majority of the cash. So there's three owners, but only two rotating this governor role.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Every 5 years, basically, the Edens and Lazary switch between the veto, so they can overrule any vote, basically. As far as I understand it, whoever is in that role can overrule votes. And that led to a head coaching decision where Edens was outvoted 2-1 and he still won, which was obviously controversial.
Was this last season, was it?
I believe so. There's an article on our site, 7500 to Holt, where Rob Jones spoke to Brewhoop, who are the SB Nation Milwaukee Bucks blog, and they went massively in depth on Edens and the books. So I recommend you read that. But yeah, there was a big problem when he basically outvoted. He was a losing vote and he forced it through. So in a way that's positive, because you do want someone with a driven vision. But if that decision doesn't work out, that system doesn't work.
Yeah, and I think we have to look at it and think about where has American team ownership and Premier League team ownership, like with a guy like owning two, where has that worked before? And you struggle to find names. I think it worked. Was it the Glazers at United? Did they own an NFL team? They did, didn't they? Right. I think Stan Kroenke owns an American team as well.
Yeah, he moved the Rams from St. Louis to Los Angeles.
That's true. Shahid Khan as well.
Yeah, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I like them. No, they've done it right. I think they're probably going to get moved though.
But do you
unfortunately?
Think, do you think people? Do you think Villa fans anyway? Do you think people are going to be comparing him or thinking about him alongside Randy Lerner? Do you think people are going to be thinking of Wes Edens in the same breath of thinking about Randy Lerner? Is this a danger with Villa fans? Do you think there's something to worry about there?
With Randy Lerner, I've got a great deal of respect for Randy Lerner because of some of the things that, you know, you read about him going through. I'm not going to pity him too much because he's a rich person. He's a massively rich person. But he inherited the Cleveland Browns from his father, Al Lerner. So he didn't necessarily want to run that club, as far as I understand. Mm-hmm. And from their success, you can kind of tell that I think he backed them really big for a season of American football. And they were pushing the envelope and are really trying to make themselves into a player constantly appearing in the playoff team. However, they compete in a horrible division. It's the AFC North, so you've got the Baltimore Ravens, who were formerly the Cleveland Browns, massively successful. You've got the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, massively successful. Then you've got the Cincinnati Bengals, who were thereabouts. So out of those four teams, there's always someone who's going to finish bottom, and that's going to be the Cleveland Browns. That's history, unless they can push the envelope and move forward. That's exactly what happened with Villa when Man City came along and started spending money. It pushed that envelope far beyond the means of Aston Villa. But back to Randy Lerner, mm-hmm. I don't think you can compare Randy Lerner and Wes Edens, because Wes Edens chased the Milwaukee Bucks, invested in them, and got them to a level of stability where not only the team feels good, but it looks good as well. It's a fashionable team to support.
No, look, you've got Chris Middleton in there. You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, right, as well. You've got some good players in that side, man.
The badge looks fresh. The jerseys look great.
Yeah.
It's a team that you would feel good to support, and you can't say that about the Browns. I think Randy Lerner wanted to correct his mistake with the Browns, with Villa, and the situation got too much. Then he went through that high-profile divorce as well. Tore him apart completely. I think he tried to do the right thing by Villa, and it didn't work out because he kept giving the jobs to the wrong people.
He spent a lot of money, man. He gave money to Martin O'Neill, you know, spent a lot of money on assets that weren't worth much. But you know, we don't need to go down that road again.
Yeah, we can't forget that he gave money to Julio, to Lambert, and to Sherwood.
Oh, he's so had a lot of bad luck.
People spent a lot under Lerner, and nothing came come of it. And I'm not going to sit here and, you know, praise the man and turn him into a saint almost. But no, there's no comparison. I think Lerner ended up in a situation where he owns sports teams, where Edens has pursued that.
To be
different, there's a massive difference.
To be fair, right, I might come under fire here, but I feel like you know, the whole Tom Fox situation, bringing on those guys who were scouting players like Veretout and whatnot. I think we just brought that in just a little bit too late, and I think we were already shot down by that point. But Randy Lerner did give it a go. As far as Wes Edens goes, like, Milwaukee Bucks fans aren't incredibly unhappy, are they? But they weren't great last season. I think that's the thing. So I think they're quite kind of in a situation where they're like, you know, we're doing okay, but we really should be doing better. They want to go back to the glory days where, you know, they won the title back in 2001. I might be completely wrong here, and I might be pulling statistics out of my ass, just like I pull statistics out of my ass when I mentioned Nassif Suarez is worth $9 billion. I don't know what he's worth because I'm looking around everywhere and I can't find anything. But James, Milwaukee Bucks, is that the model that they're running right now? Is it similar to what we're going to be running at Villa, considering we're going to have more than one owner? Three owners, in fact, just like them.
I'm not going to say massively, because look at what they're spending on Giannis. You know, it's that's not going to happen at Villa. You're not going to pay a player $366,000 a week, are you?
No, but they do have a system in the NBA, don't they? You know, every team does more or less what is supposed to make the same amount of money, right?
Oh, yeah. They're a smaller market team. And I think, I don't want to say that Villa or Birmingham are bigger than Milwaukee, but I think it is a smaller market in Wisconsin for a basketball team than it would be for Villa in Birmingham. I think
really?
Villa, relatively, would be bigger.
Oh, I mean, Wisconsin's a big state, man. You've got Green Bay people as well, haven't you?
Yeah, but you've got a lot of competing sport. You know, you've got Wisconsin State University, you've got the Green Bay Packers, whomever else, you know, to divide your attention up. And I don't necessarily play at the same times, but I don't see that much crossover there. I think if you're going to go for stuff, you're going to go for that college football Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know what I mean? But with Birmingham, you've got Villa. You know, massive, massive, massive team. That can't be understated. This area should belong to two teams. And one of them, I guess, is going to be Wolverhampton.
Yeah, yeah,
because they're getting put. They're getting pushed in a good way. The second one, there's a lot of room for Villa here. You know, it's not the West Midlands deserves massive football clubs.
And the whispers are that this deal potentially, we don't know this, right? But you know, there was talk before it got confirmed, the investment, that it was with a view to buying the club fully by the end of it, which could be good. With a 55% stake, right? So it's something like that, isn't it? It's just about a majority between the two of them. With those two having the majority, but Tony Zia still having the overall control of it. Does it mean that Tony's still going to be in charge of all the decisions, or are we going to see these guys step in and really go hands-on here? Because from where I'm standing right now, we don't know an awful lot about them. They haven't spoken to the media just yet by the looks of it. So maybe it's just an investment for them. Maybe they don't want to get too involved with the club.
Well, the way the ownership structure works is that you have Nassef Sariris. We'll speak about him a bit in a minute once we finish this. Nassef Sariris is the executive chairman. He's the top. Then you have the co-chairman, which is Edens and Tony Shaw.
Right.
So that situation where Tony owns, I believe, 45% of the club, that makes him the biggest single majority shareholder. However, Edens and Sirius between them have overall control. So if you compare that, those two can vote Shaw out. And if Sirius is top, I guess that's that governor role
we're
speaking about, where he can, his vote is the only one that matters, basically. From what I'm reading, we'll go on to Sabiris now, mate, is that he looks like a very trustworthy character, very humble, very much a, dare I say, a learner figure. Someone who's not going to do a lot of speaking, but someone who's got massively deep pockets.
True. I mean, his family's worth like ridiculous amount of money. You look at what he's worth.
No, his family's, with Najib as well, there's a lot of money. So Najib's his brother, and I forgot his father's name, but there's a lot of money going around that family. And Najib, especially, I think he owns a club in the Swiss League, and he tried to buy an island for refugees.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, there's a lot of kindness in that family, I do believe. Sariris had a tax thing, a big tax issue.
Nassef, yeah?
Our Sariris' brother. Had a tax issue, I believe that was resolved, and once it was resolved, that he did pump money into kind of the Egyptian economy. So, sounds very Trumpian there. Like, you kind of resolve the issue, then pump money into that issue to kind of, I don't know, would it be glossing it over, covering it over? Or is it part of the deal? I don't know, but it just seems like money talks.
I mean, he's got a lot of investments, hasn't he? I think he's got two companies, hasn't he? He's got Orascom Construction Industries and he's got OCI, right? So one of them is an engineering and building firm. One of them, which is basically trading on the Cairo Exchange and the Nasdaq in Dubai. This I'm reading off Forbes, by the way. But he also has holdings in cement companies as well, like Lafarge Holcim. And interestingly enough, another funny tweet that I saw recently, which is very true. Birmingham City obviously are sponsored by Adidas, so every time a Birmingham City fan buys a shirt, they're actually increasing the net worth of Nassef Sariris because he has holds in Adidas as well. And also, I think it's just worth mentioning that one of his companies, Villa, obviously are very well known for their fantastic pitch. What do you call them? Groundsman Awards every single year. Well, it's going to get even better now because Nassef Sariris actually owns a nitrogen fertilizer producer. So one of the world's largest. So that grass is going to be greener.
So Sariris and Edens know each other because they're mates.
Really?
No, they are pals. That article in the Times, I suggest you get on there, read it, buy whatever subscription you need to kind of do it for a week. But there's a lot of information in there. I think you can read it for free if you sign up. But no, seriously, that they are mates and they do have a massive interest in football. Eden's has been following football since the World Cup was last in the United States, and he was also kind of pushing Beckham to be involved in that Miami franchise that he's making. Siwiris, of course, he's on the board at Adidas as well.
That's great, that is, to be fair, isn't it?
It's a lot of footballing and sporting interests. So let's talk about the Adidas thing, because it's quite funny that, you know, that team over there, whose kits are made by Adidas, that template they've got, that blue template, when they buy them, I assume that some of this money, you know, in essence, would be going right into Siwiris' pockets.
Well, yeah, it's funny, isn't essence. It? It is funny.
It's not exactly going to be that route, but in terms of the idea,
I'm not sure
funny.
What his stake is in Adidas. By the way,
he's on the board, so it's a pretty decent whack, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, it will be. It will be. And interestingly enough, right, here's another link. And by the way, we're not doing this to try and hype up the owners. We're not trying to be like, oh, everything's going to be great. We're rich. We understand. You know, we're trying to step back. We're trying to provide you a profile of these guys. Do you know? Can you tell me anyway how Nassif Siwiris is related to Bill Gates? Not genetically. I mean, do you know where the link is?
Bill Gates invests in one of his companies.
He does. He has a 7% share in OCI. Now, I mean, this tells you something, doesn't it? Because guys like Bill Gates, you know, the big investors, the big businessmen, they don't invest in businesses which they don't think are going to work, and they look at everything. You know, you look at, you know, it's basically the Warren Buffett model. They don't just invest in any company. They look at who's in charge and they look at the decisions that they make. Now, that to me is a good endorsement, potentially one which should get us just a little bit excited. It surprises me that Villa only cost $39 million, though, according to Bloomberg.
I think that might be each. I don't know. I think they might have paid 39 each. But I'd be very surprised if they got that, because that would prove how desperate the situation is.
According to Bloomberg, and I quote, right, Siwiris and Eden's group, right, so they have a group together. I mean, this is how they mates, NSWE, right, will acquire a 55% stake in the team for about £30 million, brackets $39 million, people familiar with the matter said. That's according to Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah. No, that's just for the majority stake, though, isn't it? Not the full...
Right. Sure. So we're close to about 80 million.
Yeah, what I would say is that this is rolling and eventually Shaw will be phased out. Tony Shaw will be phased out as Edens and Siwiris will acquire more of their of Aston Villa. As time ticks on, it's going to be a progressive takeover.
Can I just have a moment to defend Tony, by the way?
We'll go on. We'll speak about Tony in a minute, mate. We'll go fully in on him. Trust me. We've just got to nail off and seal off Siwiris and Edens. Is that all right?
Okay. Yeah, let's go for it, man.
Or do you want to go?
No. Come on. Let's keep going. We've got time.
We got a question from the Claret and View, excellent Villa blog that's kind of tackling every issue as it pops up. They would like to know the thoughts regarding how likely it is that Siwiris and Edens are going to invest heavily in facilities and staff to reach a quote sustainable model. I think it's, you know, you see the books and I think team that's well run, team that looks good, team that feels good to support, not necessarily massively successful, but one that I would feel happy to support. That's, and it speaks to me as a sustainable team as well. So not only does it look good, feel good, it runs good. I think that is very much Eden's interest in making a team that is not just self-supporting, but one where it's like Brentford, where you can see the system and the system works. And God, I hope we become like that. Not that we should step down to, you know, quote Brentford's level, even though they'll probably finish above us this season. That we should mirror that and sign the players that Brentford are signing, because the players that Brentford are signing are good players, fantastic players that no one else is going for. That's the model. So I think it's very likely. I think that we'll see a big investment in not making Bodymore Heath incredible, maybe not making Villa Park incredible right now. I think we'll see scouting and analytics really pumped up and grassroots coaching and those facilities. I think those will be invested heavily in before they crack on Villa Park and Bodymore Heath. What's your thoughts on that?
Okay, so first of all, I've been correcting myself on statistics all throughout, right? The Bucks didn't win a championship in 2001, but they made it to the playoffs, right, which is big. Eastern Conference playoffs, anyway. They want to return back the glory days. You know, they had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar back in the day. You know, if you don't know who that is, he is a basketball great, one of the greatest of all time. There's tons of documentaries on him if you want to check him out. But anyway, Bucks obviously are a team which had a huge past. Villa, the same, right? We've had a huge past. We want to go back to where we were back in the day. When Edens came in, he bought the club for $550 million. Forbes, now in 2018, as of February 2018, estimated the value of the club to be something of around $1 billion, which means that he has essentially doubled the value of the club since he was there. If you want to talk about facilities, you ask about facilities. Well, look, Edens, since he's been there, he's overseen and basically encouraged the instatement of a new arena, which basically shows you right there that he is interested in investing in a club and investing in the facilities and growing the club, not only on the, you know, not only on the field, but also outside of it. So as far as I can tell, I think these guys will be very good at that. So I wouldn't worry on that end. In terms of investing in the club, again, look, I don't know, because basketball works very differently to football. You know, when it comes to scouting and whatnot, they have college football. Everybody's watching the same players. They know what's going on, and the players who are known sort of as the best draft picks are sort of known all around, you know, the league as the best draft picks. So it's funny how it works there. I would prefer to see a good scouting system coming in, but my worry is, and I will have this slight worry, just like we had under Tony Zia, just like we had under Randy Lerner, that we may not have the right football guys in charge to oversee the investment in the correct players. That is my only worry. As far as facilities, I'm happy. I think if we're successful, I think if we're doing okay and we get past this financial fair play, we're going to be fine. It is just that slight worry on signing players, because James, I know you mentioned Brentford and the players that they're signing, but not everybody is that good at doing that. You know, it is the very rare clubs who are able to do that.
Let's make ourselves like that then. Tony Jarman, let's talk about him. I know you're gagging to say something about him, but first I think I need to. Yeah.
Right,
yeah, do you want
No, go ahead.
Get it out.
I'm not gagging to say anything. I just wanna shoot Villa fans with a little bit of realism. But you go ahead. I know how you feel.
I'm genuinely quite upset that I'm not upset. It's just there's a lot of people rushing to defend him. You have to remember that Tony Shaw has come out and genuinely attacked and encouraged pylons. And this is Keith Wyness as well. They've encouured pylons of media figures who've dared criticise him and dared say question his money. And I feel the situation is now where he speaks with a very solemn tone on Twitter and how he's always tried to do the right thing. I get that, but you can't have it both ways. You can't, you know, what he did was genuinely quite bad. Looking back, and I think we all joined in, that he would launch attacks on people. On people who dared say, where's the money coming from? And these are people that are linked to finance, they're people that are linked to business, people that are linked to economics. And more importantly, people that are linked to China.
Okay,
that are saying this stuff. And he'll come out and not just shout them down, call them idiots, jerks, journalists. And that's dodgy.
No, it's not dodgy at all. It's just the way he responds to stuff like that. A lot of businessmen are like that. You know, he's not going to be the only one that's going to kind of come out and say something when he's attacked. It doesn't mean he's a bad businessman. It doesn't mean that he has the wrong intentions either.
No, I get that. But it's like, I, as a person, cannot critique the president of the United States for doing one thing and look at my owner of the football club I support and not criticize them for doing the same thing, because I've done that. I've, you know, he has been almost hypocritical of me. You know, it's big hypocrisy that I will critique one person that I don't like. You know, I won't get involved in politics or anything, but what criticize one person I don't agree with, and then
okay,
not criticize someone that I am forced to like because they own my football club.
But you're not forced to like them though. You know, it's.
I guess you are in a sense that you want to like. You are more inclined to like them.
No, I think people were perfectly fine with it when things were going our way. When our luck went downhill, and by the way, Tony Zia's luck as well went downhill. You know, people turned on him and started saying things to him, despite the fact he was just doing exactly the same things he was doing for the last 2 years. Literally, from what I see, right, as Villa fans, we're frustrated. We want the right things to happen at our club, right? We wanted Tony Zia to succeed. We wanted his investments to work, right? Unfortunately, like through no fault of his own, his money got locked up in China. And when you look at the situation, it's because the Chinese government, you know, prevented that from happening, right? They prevented him from taking money over. And I don't think he's dodgy. I don't think he's ever been lying. I think he genuinely came to the club with the right intentions. Yeah, he messed up bad, right? And you can criticize his ownership all you want. What I don't like is personal attacks at the guy. There's been way too much of that. I am honestly, right, whenever I see that, I just think you need to take a step back and you need to understand the way things work. The other thing that I was angry about was the fact that people would come at him with personal attacks again every time that he rejected an offer for the club. That in my mind, was idiocracy. I've got no problem with criticizing Zia. He needs to keep his mouth shut sometimes. His mouth is way too big sometimes on Twitter. And some of the club statements that he brought out were stupid. He should not have brought them out because all they did was encourage attacks. Fair enough, right? But you don't attack a guy personally for trying to conduct his business in the best way. You guys had a go. This is the irony, right? You guys had a go at him for stupid business. And yet when you get clubs, or you get people, trying to buy the club for a small amount of money, who perhaps aren't the right owners of the club, who perhaps don't have the power that the club needs to take us forward, and he's rejecting them, you still want to have a go at him. He waited for the right offer, and what we've got now is Saweeris and Wes Edens, two very good businessmen, and I think a model that we can expect, and I think two businessmen that we can respect. What we've got now is a good offer on the table, and we waited for it. What it didn't need was 2 or 3 months of people bashing Zia every single time an offer came in. He tried to sell the club. He sold the club. What are we complaining about?
It's just, I you look back at the situation, and regardless of if his money was locked up or not, the situation that we got into was one we should have never, ever gotten into. I don't care about the players being forced to pay out of their own pocket for the food in the canteen at Bodymore Heath. I don't care about the fact that we'd have had to sell Grealish and Chester, because those are the realities of a situation where you overspend at any club and miss the target. What I care about is the fact that we came very disastrously close to not being able to pay our bills. And not just that, not being able to pay the wages of the people who work at the club and the tax bill. That's bad.
But we overspent, right? What Zia thought that he was putting money into was good investments. Did he not? Right, McCormack, Richards, all of the players that we brought in, you know, he thought he was investing in good assets, right? But how is he to know any better? He's not a football man, right? So when people are making those decisions and signing those players, the responsibility is on them. And yet it comes back to bite the owner in the arse, and ultimately, it still goes back to Tony Zia. But like, the people you should be directing your anger at, in my opinion, are the ones who have been overseeing the transfers. And who are they? They're the managers and people, you know, who have been basically in charge of that stuff, the directors of football or whatnot. So, like, if you hire experts, if you hire people that say they know football, and they go ahead and sign these players, and then basically the assets turn to dust because the players just aren't that good, whose fault is it? It's not the owners, it's the scouts, it's the people who have recommended buying them. And it happened to Lerner as well. Exact same thing happened to Lerner. Exact same thing. But only this time, what happened was, you know, it was an extreme. And it's not like the club ran out of money. It's a financial fair play system. It's just not, it's not good for clubs like us. But yeah, I struggle to believe that Tony Zia didn't do his best to take us up. I struggle to believe he didn't have the right intentions either. So it's just one of those things where I think we got unlucky again. You know, he got the wrong people in charge. Still his fault, I guess. And that's why we ended up in the situation we're at. Like, who do you blame though, James? This is the thing. Who do you blame for all our money going?
Okay, so here's who we blame. We have to blame Tony Shaw, because if you want to be successful, you cannot simply trust people who are making constant wrong decisions. There was a lot of trust put into not just Keith Warnus, but Steve Round and Steve Bruce. There's a lot of money that is on their hands that has went out of this football club. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to blame him for not saying no. And not because the bottom line is the club should never have been in this situation regardless.
He should have held back, you know, right?
The money that we wasted would have saved us if the worst happened. And the worst was if we were a Portsmouth or a Stoke or a Birmingham City doing this, the club would probably not exist. And I don't want to put Stoke in the same category as Birmingham City, but sometimes, you know, it's going to happen when a club can't attract investors. And that, you know, you have to thank whoever you're going to pray to that Aston Villa won the European Cup in 1982 and they've been around forever. Because if that history didn't exist and Villa Park didn't exist, I don't think Aston Villa would have existed for very much longer. And that's the genuine bottom line. Either that or we'd have been sold off for pennies to an owner who would have genuinely asset stripped the club, and then we would have had major problems. So either way, major problems were coming with Tony Shaw, thanks to not being able to say no. Then we go on to Keith Warnus, whose strategy was to simply buy as many old, aging, crumbling English figures. And this includes John Terry, who was fantastic for us for most parts of last season. The dude was 38. What successful club is looking at 38 and 36-year-olds to propel the club forward? We're going to sign Robin Van Persie in January, even when these problems were known. If Tony Shaw isn't the main decision maker, then Keith Warnus was, and I've no surprise that he got booted out. And I'd love to hear his side of the story, actually.
I want to hear it. That's something
we probably have heard it through his media contacts without knowing, but I would genuinely like to hear it from his mouth about what has went on, because he is suing the club not for unfair dismissal, but for tortuous interference, which means he was stopped from doing his job by someone. Stopped from doing his job.
I want to hear him out first. I don't want to throw blame around. I don't want to say it's his fault, right? But from what I've seen this summer anyway, Zaha, my opinion, he messed up. He messed up bad. The guy isn't a bad guy, in my opinion. He's not what people... I don't think he's shady either, right? Like, I think there's major racial undertones when people you know, call him shady, because you wouldn't say that a businessman from America, if he messed up, was shady. You'd just kind of say he messed up.
Let's just speak about that for a moment, because you're not going to be... People want to see Tony Shaw's finances and they want to see his background. You're not going to be able to see his background because you cannot access the Chinese infrastructure. You cannot get into that. You cannot get into those records. They're not available on Google. There's a firewall blocking them.
But that's China, though. You know that's
China. So when you are calling this bloke shady based on... You can call him an idiot. You can call him stupid. You can call him misguided. But to call him shady, it is rooted.
It's really racist. You're saying that Chinese people are dodgy. That's what you're saying, because nobody ever, at the end of the day, turns around and says it to a businessman from America.
No one said it about Lerner.
No, exactly.
No one said it about Lerner.
Exactly. What's Zia hiding? He's not hiding anything, right? Whenever he's been asked about it, he's mentioned it. He said, look, this is what I've got, right? This is my doctorate. And he said, you know, that, like, my money is in China, like, but I don't know what else you want the guy to say. So there's that, right? And then the other thing is, when it came down to it, this summer, when the club got into trouble and he needed investment, did he not go out to find investment? Did he not go out and try to make things right?
No, he did. As far as we know, he did. So I think there's certain things you can accuse him of. I think you can certainly say the Chinese government's influence on events happening at Aston Villa were allegedly a bit uncomfortable to deal with and to contract. But to throw a lot at Tony Shaw, I mean, there are situations where Chinese businessmen have been complete con men. You know, look at AC Milan. The bloke just turned up and bought the club.
Oh, AC Milan was bad, right? There was no concept of checking, you know.
So the bloke turned up with forged statements and bought the... I will say that AC Milan are the biggest most historic football club in the world. If you've not, if you're looking at Manchester United, AC Milan, and Real Madrid, I honestly put Milan, if not top thereabouts. Baresi, Maldini. Oh, there's just so much going on there.
Certainly in the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah, but you look at the red and black, you look at the badge, you look at the history, you look at everything involved. You know, Real Madrid, certainly, I consider them...
Atletico Madrid, let's not forget as well. Another...
Yeah, Atletico. You can't discount these clubs, but you look at AC Milan, you think, how did a club of that size, one you could compare happily with Manchester United and Real Madrid, get bought by a man who has no money at all? He may as well have been me. No, that's no joke. He may as well have been me. Because he bought the club, I don't know how he managed to pay for players, but he certainly spent a lot of money on players. And the only reason Milan are competing in next year's UEFA Europa League is because that club has fallen into the hands of a predatory vulture fund that loaned this bloke the money to buy the club.
Ah, yeah, that's true.
Massive gamble, and the dude's probably ruined now. But that's what happens at this level. So there is examples of Chinese businessmen being con men. That doesn't mean all Chinese businessmen are con men. And if you're not giving Tony Shaw the benefit of the doubt that we did give to other owners, then there certainly is that. However, there's plenty of reasons to criticize him as well. You just got to be careful with your wording, because exactly. It does fall onto these tropes.
And I don't
know. No
like
one's going to sit there and call you racist. It's just you're using these easy, simple tropes instead of thinking. You know, there's room to think critical here.
I also don't like the use of the C word. I just things like that. I think we just need to. I just think we need to be a little bit more realistic as Villa fans. Yeah, it was bad, right? We had hard luck.
Does the C word mean Chinese, or does it mean and is it a nasty word?
It's a four letter word.
It's a four letter word.
Right. It's just personally for me, those kinds of words are reserved for the worst types of people. All right.
I was getting there, to be honest. I was getting there.
Yeah, but
I was getting...
You were getting there, James, but all the while he's been trying to sell the club all summer. He's been trying to make things...
Yeah. No, I think with hindsight, you can accept that he's tried to sell the club and he's actually let it go, which is... You look at the situation at Hull where they are not letting the club go.
Exactly.
It's, you know... He could have held on. And the only thing I think that was stopping him from holding on, if we sold Grealish, he'd still be there. I don't think there would be investment, genuinely.
But he held on for Grealish, didn't he? You know, we've had offers and that kind of thing, right? But he hasn't.
Well, we don't know if he's held us. We haven't had a bid for Grealish. There's been no bid. I've spoken to the people I know who run the Tottenham Hotspur blog, because as far as we know, there's been bids and bids and bids. There's been no official bid chucked in for Grealish.
I don't want to jinx it, but I don't think Spurs are signing him. You know why? I don't think Spurs are signing anyone. Poch is making a point of it. Pochettino's making a point of it. I suppose if they do sign anyone, it would be a young player from the Championship. So if it is anybody, it's Grealish. But we have to take all Spurs transfer speculation with a pinch of salt at this point.
Like, shall we move on to financial fair play?
We can do.
How much time have you got?
I got time. Don't worry.
You got time.
Don't worry.
Financial fair play. So Villa's big issue now is, of course, FFP. There are rumours that there's a quote-unquote black hole of $40 million to $25 million to be made up. Of course, the biggest thing that will make up that gap is a sale of Jack Grealish for 25 to 40 million, which of course will make the entire thing up. However, Villa are now in a position where they probably don't have to sell Jack Grealish, but they do have to make moves. They do have to sell people. That's clear, because this wage bill is unsustainable and the people we've got eating the club up, even if they're good players, it's not Championship, is it?
Okay, I'm looking through the free agent list as we talk now, James.
So, Villa, okay. There are a number of things about FFP that rumours we need to squash. Villa can't, well, Sirius and Edens can't sponsor the club for hundreds of millions of pounds, because no club is able to do that. Manchester City, a lot of people look at the links between Etihad and the club, and they're not as close as the links that Recon and the club have.
No.
Recon being Tony Shaw's club. Sure. So that doesn't fly. Villa can't just pump money into the club. They can't be quote-unquote smart. And people who are saying they can be smart and put 20 million into a shirt sponsorship and the club, it's not going to happen, because the EFL look at market rate. If the going rate for investment in Villa Park naming rights is 5 million and Villa buy them for 20 million, they're only going to be worth 5 million against financial fair play.
Right, exactly.
It's a big chunk.
Exactly, exactly.
It's still 10% of that rumored 40 million, but I don't think it's as bad as 40 million. I think it's closer to 30 million or 25, because you've got to take into account that Robert Snodgrass is off the wage books, Joshua Onoma is off the wage books, Lewis Grabban is off the wage books, Axel Tuanzebe is off the wage books, and John Terry is no longer taking a wage, and Gabby Bonlahor is no longer taking a wage. Alan Hutton has taken a wage cut. So we've saved a ton of money there. However, they still need to make that money up.
It's a good start.
And what's the punishments for breaking financial fair play? So if by next March, Aston Villa haven't made headway into cutting these losses, they will face a fine. Remember that QPR took a 40 million hit? 40 million fine.
40 million?
40 million pound fine, mate, from the EFL.
Ooh.
Or, that it's no small amount. And if you're saying, if you were happily saying, I'll take the fine, it's not coming out of your money. It's not coming out of your board. Would you ask one?
Nassif's just chilling. He's just going, yeah, I'll take it.
But he's not. What would you want him to pay 40 million for the club? That's
just what you want in an investment, man. That's just what you want. I'm investing in this club, right? And if they take a 40 million pound hit, that's cool. You know, I bought them for half price anyway. No, that's not the way it works. Jeez, man.
No, what would you want him to take? There's a lot of people, and I've seen it so much, and I'm not going to go into it because it's becoming like a meme now of me getting annoyed at it. But people are saying, I would just take the fine. It's not coming out of your pocket, so you can say whatever you want. But Villa's losses will be thereabouts with QPR. So their spend will be, I venture to guess their spend will be higher.
Yeah.
Because of the people we signed. We haven't maybe signed Chris Samba on 100 grand a week.
Oh my God.
But we are, it'll be close with John Terry. And you've got to think about the other players that we've signed on money. Micah Richards and Ross McCormack are sitting around earning wages. So you've got to think, do I take the fine? But that comes with a massive risk, because say Villa finish first
yep.
this season and they finish with record points, how many clubs do you think will go to the EFL and say they finished in this position because of breaking financial fair play?
About as many who went to the EFL about Wolverhampton, which was a lot.
I think there will be 23 clubs out of the 24
yep.
that will go to the EFL and complain. Then you've got to consider the structure where the EFL are legally allowed to move you to seventh place, deduct your points. They'll move you out of the promotion and playoff positions if they feel like it. That goes to a financial fair play panel. Mm. Now, Villa can legally appeal this, but do you want to be in that situation? Do you want to spend your entire summer thinking Villa's promotion doesn't count if they've done good in the league, but it counts them if they're going to pay for their past mistakes? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be in that situation? Because I personally do not want to be in that situation. And why would you want to carry on this path which has led us to near destruction?
No, it's true. It's true. We're better off with these owners. I feel like, you know, going back to square one, as like, I think, you know, with a sound mind right now. However, my problem is we're just going to lose all our assets in the process, which means that we're going to be basically worth nothing. If we sell all our best players, we will have lost all our assets. That is my worry. You know, we'll be worth nothing.
It's horrific to confront, but at the end of the day, this hole is nothing that Villa have dug themselves. It is, and it's, you know what, it'll kill me to lose Grealish and Chester, but that's a reality for most clubs, and Villa can't avoid that. Like, you lose your best players if you make mistakes.
But you know what, the thing is we don't have replacements. We don't have anything.
That's ready. Awful. We don't have anything. That's another situation that's awful.
Well, I like,
what would you,
we get, I'm sorry, but if we start next season without any centre backs, we're getting relegated. Like, it is just true, right? Say what you like. Alan Hutton's not a centre back. Neither is Neil Taylor. Mitch Clark is great, but he shouldn't be expected to play the full season by himself. Same with Issa Solomon. He's good, perhaps not just strong enough just yet. Yeah, we start next season without any centre backs. We're fucked. Simple as.
Yeah.
Simple as.
So I think we've answered Dan Rollinson's question of, can we just take the fine? Because I do. What would you want to take a 40 million fine? What would you want your club to be in a situation where you're getting fined and potentially points deducted? A lot of people are saying, fuck it, two fingers up at them.
But are we not potentially facing a situation where it's like, take the fine or get relegated anyway? Are we not facing that?
that's the situation. Yeah, that is the situation. Imagine if Villa finished 24th and they have a 40 million fine on top. That's not going to happen. But would you want to contend with that situation? Why would you not want your club to do the right thing, become sustainable, and cut these losses? Why would you not want that?
Because we'll have no assets.
I mean, it's one or the other, isn't it? Like, it's either you have to pay for these mistakes. You don't get away with paying Ross McCormack that much money and not paying.
What do you do then?
Well, then you have to confront the other situation. And this is a question brought to us by Tom Jones, who is not a Welsh singer. He's not the actual Tom Jones. Unless we get a huge fee for Jack, how do we pass FFP? Selling Chester, Codger, Hogan would make an little impact because it's based on profit rather than just a fee. Does this mean we have to sell?
Oh, my Lord, that's awful.
Yeah, it's against book value, which is a completely different accounting value rather than the straight fee. So if you get 20 million for Hogan, you don't that's not necessarily 20 million against FFP.
That's ridiculous.
But that's
actually ridiculous.
So if you sold Ross McCormack, depending on how much, it could be a bad deal for FFP because you'll be posting a loss. If you sold him for 1 million and we bought him for 15?
That is a mess.
But
that isn't fair, man. Like, that's just not.
It is fair, though, isn't it? Because why are you buying these players and selling them for 1 million? Why are you buying them for 15 million and getting into this situation?
Because you can't predict, you know, players turning around and just deciding not to play. Like, Richards and Ross McCormack, like, this is why it isn't fair, right? You as a club sign these players. They turn around and go, right, no, we're not gonna try our best, we're not gonna play. And their value drops. That's not your fault. Like, when you signed them, they were of that value. I don't know. I think to me that's awful. Like, and it puts smaller clubs at a huge risk. Let's say, for example, a club with you know, not that much money, right, goes out and makes their record signing. They sign a new star player, right, because they think that is the best thing for them. But I think, you know, this is the way that this is the kind of player that we need to be able to compete at this level. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to be able to score any goals. That player then just decides that they're not going to put any effort in, and essentially devalues himself. Or let's even say they break their leg and they can't play football again. What are you going to do then?
No, I think Villa will be. I think there's room for appeal in these type of situations, but it's also in the future. If that's me, that's Villa. It's going to put me off making stupid signings. And I'm not saying that Ross McCormack was a stupid signing. I'm saying that buying Ross McCormack, Jonathan Codger, and Scott Hogan for around 15 million each is stupid.
Yeah, no, signing all three of them was stupid.
Exactly.
But like the problem is the face of football has changed now, right? You can't be like you can't be shackling clubs like Villa from signing players whatsoever when huge clubs are basically allowed to buy players for like £200 million and inflate the whole transfer market. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Well, it comes to something when Villa spent a fair bit last summer as well, didn't they, with Whelan and Al-Mohammadi coming in and a few loan players coming in. Of course, John Terry. Imagine if there was no FFP and they continued to spend money they didn't have in that vein. We'd be looking at a different situation today. What if they spent another?
We keep on spending, wouldn't we?
There is a reason financial fair play exists, and it isn't necessary to restrict clubs. It's to make sure they spend healthily. Villa didn't. You can't say Villa's spend was anything near healthy, because again, you go back to the striker situation. You bought three of the same type of striker, three in the same position for 45 million. You can only play one of them. If Villa were smart, they would have probably stuck and made sure Ross McCormack worked and sold him at the first possible opportunity. They didn't do that. They sacked him off to Australia.
And that's partially, that's majorly Bruce's fault.
That is. Why would you not rehabilitate him?
I blame Bruce fully for McCormack.
But then why, if you had McCormack and Codger on the books, would you buy Scott Hogan? And then what would you buy Scott Hogan and not play him?
No, it's understandable. I get that.
No, it's frustrating. So we do have a lot of blame regarding this, and a lot of it, I'm thinking, does fall on Steve Bruce. He's not invincible in this. He's made no attempt at all to rehabilitate Ross McCormack.
I've been silent about Bruce over the summer, but I think, you know, doing some thinking. Managerially, you know, on the pitch or whatever, I ain't got much of a problem with Bruce. But thinking about it, you know, when you look at financial fair play and you look at the situation, you know, when it comes to money, I'm now starting to think of Steve Bruce along the same lines as I thought of Martin O'Neill. It's irresponsible. It's selfish, the way that they've handled everything. And yeah, it's ultimately the fans who suffer now. Ultimately, the fans who suffer.
No, you're completely right. And it's Steve Bruce didn't need to make the decisions. This frugality that he's approaching this window with should have been it from day one, but it wasn't, because we signed Hourihan, Lansbury, Bjarnason, and Hogan in a single and Bree in a single window. We didn't play half of them. Lansbury got benched the entirety of last season, and Bjarnason didn't appear until it was too late. The man management of his own signings, it's been terrible. And the way he's treated Gallini and McCormack, it's just pissing money away. It just frustrates me.
Gallini was worth so much more than we sold him for. And
he's going to be defined by the two mistakes he made in the first two appearances he made for the club. He got better, and we sacked him off, and we brought Sam Johnson in, and we developed him for West Brom.
I think you can blame fans partly for that as well, though.
I don't know.
People get on the back straight away of players like that.
People got on the back of Sam Johnson, though. We can't forget that. Sam Johnson got worse than Gallina. In fact, Sam Johnson got so much that we wanted Gallini back. If I remember.
Yeah, I do remember. I do remember that, actually, to be fair. Remember that.
What we can wrap up the Y&S regime now. Steve Bruce goes on and he fights another day. We'll see. There's rumours about Thierry Henry. I don't know. But
the Henry stuff is rubbish. That is absolutely
rubbish.
We
said that about the Di Matteo stuff, didn't we?
I don't think we did. Not
me and you, but I think there was a lot of initial dismissal before eventually the odds dropped and there's a more of an acceptance about it. But I don't know. It's all coming too quickly for me.
Okay, I'll tell you something. If it is Henry, if he does come in, cool. You know?
Why not? It's like, why not? I mean, he's got no experience at this level, but who does that you'd want?
Here's the thing. Right. I've said this multiple times and I'll keep on saying it. Roberto Martinez is overrated. So Belgium going to the semi-finals, I'm going to put that all on Henry. Boom.
Well, we go to this situation and I do fail for Dwight York and Sol Campbell if Thierry Henry's been linked to the Villa job. Because yes. It's awful, isn't it? That's awful. That's genius. There's a problem there if Thierry Henry is getting linked to the Villa job and they're not getting linked to any jobs.
Mate, they're not getting any job ever, man.
No, that's poor.
I think Dwight York should do. He's got experience as an assistant manager, I believe, at Sunderland.
Yeah, and he did. He was the assistant manager for Trinidad and Tobago when they went on their little World Cup run. So no, you look at the international experience cannot be translated to club management. They're two different beasts. Thierry Henry is a great striker coach for Romelu Lukaku. It doesn't mean anything. But if we're going to link Thierry Henry to the Villa job, we should be happy to link Sol Campbell and Dwight York to it, because
what I'm saying is if Henry comes in, don't get tired of Villa passing the ball around. That's what we're going to get straight away. People are going to be like, what is this tiki-taka? Why can't we just, you know, play more direct? Why can't we boot the ball into the box? That's what's going to happen, because Henry's a big supporter of Pep Guardiola, and that's the kind of football that he enjoys playing.
Yeah, and Mikel Arteta as well. He's someone who's grew up in a Guardiola system, but he's not been linked to this job. He was linked to the Arsenal job, wasn't he? He was very apparently close to getting it. But these situations don't always apply to the same people. You know, Thierry Henry didn't have that same coaching setup that Arteta had where he came through. He really developed at Manchester City under Guardiola, whereas Henry has just been the Belgium head coach, assistant coach, which is a completely different beast. Altogether. So if you're going to give this job to Henry, you might as well give it to Sol Campbell or Dwight York, because they've got the same, they may as well have the same coaching resume.
Sol Campbell, you know, a few years ago, I said yes, but like, what the last thing that we need now is another guy who gets funny every single time he gets criticised.
No, that's true. But all I'm saying is that Belgium experience counts for nothing, so you may as well employ anyone. Genuinely.
I hear that.
You can't just look at Thierry Henry and go, he's a world-class player, because that doesn't count for anything at all. You know, but then you look at people like Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard who've walked into jobs based on very little experience. And you may as well give it to York, Henry, Campbell, anyone.
I watched Rangers under Gerrard. I watched Rangers under Gerrard, and they looked very good. You know, they were playing some farmers. They were, in all fairness. But you know, I also looked at that team lineup, and I thought, yo, the star power that guy's managed to bring in, that team is ridiculous. You know, they got Scott Arfield. You know, they've still got the Morelis guy up front. You know, they've got some decent players in and around that team. He managed to sign flipping John Flanagan for, you know, like, and then Lampard at Derby. Me personally, I don't think it's going to work out, purely because I think he's going to struggle a lot more in the Championship. He'll be gone by Christmas.
So you're keeping Steve Bruce then for now? Okay, so tell you what, if you offered the choice between Thierry Henry and Steve Bruce, who's your pick?
I don't think Henry would be able to handle what the constraints of what Villa would.
Steve Bruce can barely handle the constraints, so I don't think he matters,
right? Yeah, well, Steve Bruce is living with it, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, all said and done, right? Okay, ignoring transfers, football on the pitch, all said and done, we finished third last season. Henry, I think he'd get incredibly frustrated with financial fair play. I don't know if he'd know how to handle it. He hasn't been in this kind of situation before. Henry as a coach, okay, fine. I wouldn't mind it, right? Purely because, you know, the only thing with Steve Bruce is he knows the Championship, fair enough. But I'd say that because he has some blame within this regime, maybe freshening the whole thing up wouldn't be the worst idea. But that all depends now, because like, he's been working with the young players that we have in the team. I don't know if
he gets the best out of Jack Grealish. There's no argument there that he gets the best out of Jack Grealish. We've not seen this.
Yeah, but James, what about the other young players though? If we bring in a new guy, he's going to be working with these youth players, and he's going to be like, what the hell are these guys? He won't know what they've got, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's my only worry. Unless, what about one of the youth coaches, man? What about bringing one of the, what about bringing the under-21s manager?
isn't that Kevin McDonald still?
Mate, Kevin Mack, man. Like, if it was a joint role between, like, if you had Henry as head coach and you kind of had Kevin McDonald as the manager, could that work maybe?
I don't know. I don't want to even contemplate that, mate. I really don't.
Our most successful manager of the last few years has still been Gary McAllister. So.
Oh, God. No, that's a sad indictment, really, isn't it? But should we finish off on talking about these new kits?
Oh, they're beautiful, man. Luke.
Which one's, what's your favourite?
I like the first team kit. That's my favourite. The home kit is my favourite. Absolutely. I like the away kit. I do like it. But white's never looked good on me because it's not slimming. And the goalkeeper kit is my least favourite. I'm not going to say anything bad about it, but I liked the straight up green that we had with Sam Johnston last season. But the home kit is absolutely beautiful. The away kit is as well. It will look good on people. And I think it blew every single kit in the Championship out of the water. And I think it just goes to show what you can do if you let a local business take care of it as their own project rather than sending it away to big companies who I'm not going to name, and letting them make it or letting them design it alongside hundreds, thousands of other kits around the world. And, you know, essentially, essentially saturating the quality. Just like Spurs, who have essentially got France's home kit and Barcelona's training kit. So
yeah, that's about as crap, isn't it? But no, massive props to Luke 1977, Luke Roper, and Aston Villa for taking a chance. And it's worked out marvellously, and I hope it's something that continues for years. Because if, you know, maybe you can get the backing of a kit supplier like Adidas, get them behind this. You know, if that can happen, get big money behind this and get this bloke rewarded.
Adidas ex Luke.
For what he's done. Yeah, exactly. If they're willing to do so, why not? But no, seriously, massive, massive good feelings about those kits. They've met before the financial situation. I was feeling good about them because it was good just to get that sliver of good news. I'm hanging onto any bit of good news, like I'm clawing onto it, mate. So I think we'll finish there. Steve Bruce meets the new owners on Tuesday, so all transfer talk is kind of dead until then. So we're not going to discuss the Grealish and Chester rumours. It's pointless because everything's on hold until Bruce speaks to the new owners. By the time we catch up next Sunday, I guess, we'll be in a different situation. Bruce would have met his blokes, would have played two further friendlies, and we'll be gearing up for the start of the season. So I think we'll call it there, mate. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, man. Listen, I didn't get to watch them all. I managed to catch a few friendlies last week, but I've been at work, so it's been difficult. James, do you want to just wrap up how Villa have done this week in terms of the friendlies and who I'd say or who you'd say has been the most impressive? Are there any young players that you're looking at there that you think can be first team quality?
Jake Dorhaes instantly. Mitchell Clark is good at the back. I really appreciate that, but I don't think Bruce is going to play him. Asa Silliman and Jacob Addo, they're settling in. Again, don't think they're going to be played this season. Jack Dorhaes is someone I'd look to come on. One touch passing. He doesn't look to put a pass wrong, mate.
What about Corey Blackett, Taylor, man? Is he in the same way?
He's good, but I don't think he's nailed down a position. Again, with Andre Green, we're playing these two at wing back. So I think Bruce is still testing them out. And let's succeed. Richie Delatt succeeds amazingly at wing back. He's been incredible so far. But
Richie Delatt, yeah, right. I mean, I always wanted to see him play at centre back purely because he had a shortage. But you know, he's been ridiculous at wing back. I didn't know he had the ability to run past players.
I would venture to say he's the fastest bloke in the Villa team. No joke. He's got some wheels on him. But no, he's done really well. And with the youth players, I think we've seen Gary Garner emerge again, even though he's not a youth player. And I think he'll have some part to play if he's not moved on. But no, seriously, I'm feeling really positive about this Villa team as it stands. It looks like we're going to play a back three. And we don't necessarily have the personnel to play that traditionally. But it looks like they're all kind of settling in and developing quite well. I mean, Hutton, in a back three, you're not a traditional centre-back. Mm-hmm. So it does suit him a bit more. It's like he's just got to rein it in. And I think he'll work well with Richie Delatt as long as he reigns in.
It's that positioning though, isn't it? Balls coming to the box. You don't trust Hutton with balls coming to the box. That's a problem. Hutton is very good at coming at players. He's very good at moving a little bit further forward. But when the ball comes into the box, Hutton is awful at positioning. Don't get me wrong. Great at wing back last season. Sorry, great at fullback last season. But that is my problem with him. Neil Taylor, also at centre back, not good in the air. This is where we're going to struggle next season, mate. Like, this is... Don't get me wrong. I like the front three because it means that the back three because it means that the intent is on attacking because we're going to have to score a heck of a lot of goals. But at the end of the day, when teams are whipping it in, that scares me. That worries me. I'm worried about that.
You'll have to trust James Chester to kind of marshal the back in that centre-back position. Mm. And you'll have to trust him to step up and be that John Terry figure who's always... instructing his back three.
Look, and will.
I trust him to work with Taylor, but I don't know, will Hutton necessarily be that rockiness? Because I trust Taylor to listen to anything Chester says.
I think we need to venture perhaps lower down the leagues. And I'm not usually a big fan of this, but I think we need to perhaps venture a little bit lower down the leagues and maybe pick up a League One or League Two centre-back who, you know, is known for being a leader or knowing for being good in the air, purely because I think we need the option there. I mean,
we just need someone who's going to head the ball, basically. Because I trust, in a way, I do trust Hutton to play centre back. He's not a centre back, but I do trust him to play semi-effectively in that position if marshalled correctly by Chester. But I'd also feel a lot better if we had a normal traditional centre back to play alongside him. That being said, Hutton is far more mobile than I think anyone would potentially get in. And that's a big plus.
No, I agree. I agree. Maybe there's centre-backs on the free agent market that we could look at. I think we made a big mistake in not signing Robert Huth. I think he's ending up back in back at Stoke now, isn't he? By the looks of it. You know, he would have been perfect for us. I mean, dare I say it. It's Sebastian Bassong. Isn't he a free agent? Maybe the likes of James Collins, or are we going too far back now? You know, Jason Shackles is available. I'm just thinking of guys that can step in. That's all.
Mile Jedrzejczyk will have... I think he's definitely going to be a centre-back. Definitely.
Which is a shame. It's not his position. And I think he's been awful whenever he's played there.
Yeah, he's going to have to develop this season, isn't he? Because there's no way he's not playing centre-back.
Mm. Imagine that being told as a 35-year-old player, you have to reinvent your position.
Well, I think it's natural. I think it's natural that he will eventually become a centre-back because he has the qualities. He has that aerial quality. He's just got to that positioning. It needs work. Because he can't just stand in the way as a centre-back. He can do that to great effect in defensive midfield and block off passing lines. But as a centre-back, you need to be active and reactive to situations.
So, maybe he'll have a good pre-season and maybe that is what we need. I mean, has he played there in pre-season? Have you seen him play centre-back?
No, we haven't seen Milay Jedinak at the moment. Of course, he's coming back to training this week. I believe he may be deployed against West Ham in midweek.
Okay. Okay.
Or if not, against Dresden at the end of our pre-season warm-up. I don't really expect to see him in a Villa shirt until the season starts. Same with Bjarnason and Al Mohammadi, who, of course, played in the World Cup for Egypt and Iceland. But yeah, no, Villa have done really well in their pre-season so far. They've tried to play it off the floor. They've been a bit more progressive. They've tried new things, and that's exactly what this time is for. Not necessarily winning games, and they've been winning them in big style. We've put 4 goals past a few teams.
We're playing very, very well in pre-season. Right? And when we got on our good run last season, when we were on our best run, by the way, it was without Jack Grealish. So is there, you know, ignoring everything off field, right? Ignoring financial fair play. Is there just that slightest chance that the team is actually progressing? That the team is getting better? Like that the young players that we've been bringing in are now actually reaching their potential? Is there a chance that we could be better this season?
Yeah, you've got to remember, this is Albert Adoma's first pre-season with Villa because he got injured in the first game of the last one. This is Jonathan Codger's first pre-season with Villa. And it's also going to be Jack Grealish's only one, touch wood, without an injury. So this could be massive for Villa if these three players... Because Adoma's been trialled as a striker as well. And it is looking to be something that's not bad. You know, he's playing... Yeah, and it did work against Burton in a charity match. But we'll see what happens with that. But these ideas are usually tested again when the full season comes. Like Samba at striker, this stuff is tested in pre-season and it is used in the full season. And that Samba thing did work eventually because he got put up as striker against Sheffield Wednesday and he did score 2 goals and one of them was ruled offside and we would have been back in the match. So that did work, you know, somehow. But these ideas are tested. So we saw Jedinak at centre-back last pre-season. That was deployed. We've seen Hutton at centre-back and Adoma almost as a central striker. I expect those to be deployed. And they might very well work. You know, you can't say that Adoma wouldn't work there because most of his qualities are cutting in and striking the ball. And I don't see why he wouldn't succeed as a striker at all. He's scored so many goals last season just purely from instinct.
Well, he didn't play well when he was playing as a striker last season.
He barely played as a striker. Yeah, most of his games were on the left wing, weren't they?
Yeah, I suppose so. But he did get games there. Do you know when? Yeah. You know when Bruce was flirting with the idea of just not playing a striker? That day that I was irate, man. I was absolutely irate.
That was Onoma, who was played as a striker, not Adoma.
It was Onoma, but it was around about that time when he was testing out Adoma as a striker.
I mean,
he was flirting with the idea of, what if I don't play a striker? What if I don't play Hogan? What if I play with one of these guys up there instead? Like he was just throwing up, you know, like when you just throw stuff at the wall and just hope that it sticks. That's what I'm saying.
No, right. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, wrapping it up, Villa have done well in pre-season. Mm-hmm. Should we call it there, mate? An hour and 15 minutes odd.
Yeah, I mean, this is plenty of material for you guys to work with.
Yeah. So that's been me, James Rushton. You can find me at Jamie Rushton on Twitter. Danny Raza, of course, DH Raza on Twitter. If you've got any feedback, feel free to hit us up. You can find us at 7500 to Halt. We'll be covering everything Villa. And we'll be back again soon with some a season preview, I guess. We're out of the dodgy stuff now. So we can talk about football again. Feels good, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And we may well be maybe I'll be with you at the same time next week, man. That's just hope for. Let's hope for it. Let's get... I think we're back now, aren't we, James? We're back.
Yeah, we're back. Yeah, I guess we're back, yeah.
Yeah.
So there are things to talk about now. So we're back and we'll see you next week. Goodbye, folks.